The scripture for today is from the Gospel according to John. It's the first miracle in the Gospel according to John, and it goes like this. On the third day, there was a wedding at Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and me?" Now, if I'd talked to my mother that way, I probably never would have heard the end of it. Apparently, Jesus could get away with it. And Jesus said to her, "And then my hour has not come." His mother said to her, "His servants, do whatever he tells you." Now, standing there were six stone jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. And Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they were filled up to the brim. He said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." And so they took it. When the steward tasted the water that had become wine and did not know where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn it knew, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first and then the inferior wine after the guests have all become drunk. But you have kept the good wine until now." And Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. The scripture for today is about when Jesus turns into wine, and I've kind of subtitled my thoughts, "The Wine, the Sign, and the Last in Line." That's to keep myself on track as much as anything. It helps me to have some things to keep myself. The Wine, the Sign, and the Last in Line. A couple of folks from this church, if you've seen the title and the content of this message, have been sharing a picture that's circulating around on the internet about an aisle that looks like it's in Kroger's. I probably should have had a picture up for us to see. It looks like an aisle in Kroger's, and the sign over the aisle says water. But then on all of the shelves, there's bottles of wine. And the caption on the picture reads clearly, "Jesus has been here." I like that. I also remember, this was a while ago now, we were studying in the church that I was serving, the story about Jesus turning water into wine, and they did that at the Sunday school also, and I asked one of the young men after the Sunday school class was over, "So what did you learn today?" And his summary of what he learned was, he said, "I learned that if you're going to have a wedding, it's a good idea to invite Jesus." I like that. It's a good moral too, isn't it? If you're going to have a wedding, if you're going to have a marriage for that matter too, it's good to invite Jesus. The story starts out with Jesus, the disciples, and Mary, the mother of Jesus, at a wedding. And then something goes wrong. The wine runs out. In those days, it was the custom that weddings often would last for an entire week. And they'd usually include the entire community. So they'd go around and get the whole community involved, which meant that if the wine ran out, chances are the party was pretty much over. And so there would have been quite a bit at stake. Have you ever planned something and found that your plans didn't go the way that you'd expected? I have this theory that the more important something is, the more likely it is that something's going to go wrong. And it's usually at the last minute, and it usually seems at the time to be completely catastrophic. But somehow, in the end, things always seem to work out. We had our big family Christmas get-together the Sunday after Christmas. And we had planned to have about 30 people there. Our kids were all going to be there. Their kids were going to be there. Their cousins, their aunts and uncles were all going to be there. Don, you spent, what, the better part of the week of Christmas getting ready for that gathering? She spent a couple days just decorating the table in the dining room, and then getting everything that we needed for the meal that we were going to have, making sure the meal was just perfectly cooked. And then on Christmas Day, one of our nieces decided to have a baby. We kind of knew that was coming, but then 2 days after Christmas, you're not going to probably show up if you've got a new baby in the house. So we knew that she was out. And then the morning of the party, we had a death in our extended family, and so about a third of the people that we'd been expecting didn't end up showing up. It's been my experience that things rarely go the way that they think they will. There's almost always something that comes up. So how do you deal with it? What do you do when those kinds of things happen? Is there anything that we can learn in this story about how to cope when things don't go the way that they think they should. First, there's the wine. Jesus turns water into wine. This story is found in the Gospel according to John, and you probably know that the Gospel according to John is a little different than the other Gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all read a whole lot more like histories, but not John. Matthew and Luke, for example, when they start out talking about Jesus, tell about a baby that's born in a manger, and you've got shepherds and angels and wise men, and you can kind of picture it happening. But John starts out introducing Jesus by talking about light and darkness and about how the Word is light and light came into the world and the light was grace and the darkness did not overcome it. So you get the sense in John that what we're talking about here is not just history, but it's more poetic. And we're talking more in terms of metaphors. So wondering in this story, is this more than just a story? Is it a metaphor for something? And here's what I think it's a metaphor for. If you're drinking what you need to survive, you probably drink water, right? My doctor says that I ought to be drinking a whole lot more water because it's a healthy thing for you. If you started a diet on New Year's Day, then you're probably drinking a lot of water. If you're drinking what you need to get by, water's a good thing to drink. But if you decide to take a day and go off your diet, or if you're at a party and you want to celebrate, do you drink water? What do you drink? You drink wine. Or, in other words, wine is something you drink when you're celebrating. I think what John has to say in this story is it's at the beginning of the gospel because he's wanting to introduce Jesus as the one who not just helps us get by in life, but who really wants to help us thrive in life. If you read it, keep reading a couple more chapters. When you get to the 10th chapter, there Jesus says it even more directly. He's talking about how he's like a shepherd. There are some people that want to hurt the sheep, but not the shepherd. The shepherd wants to keep the sheep safe. And then Jesus says, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I also like what the Apostle Paul says in his letter to the Ephesians. He says in the 3rd chapter, the power at work within us is able to accomplish abundantly far more than all we can ask or imagine. Too often, I think we're satisfied with less than we are capable of, largely because we haven't got the right glasses on. We don't know that there's anything better. My wife and I, as you may know, have been dogless since about August. It's the first time in our life we haven't had a dog. And so I'm trying to live vicariously through other people's pet stories. One of them that I heard this week is of a friend who got a puppy who teach the puppy obvious things like how to be housebroken. And so they came up with this plan that what they do is when the puppy had an accident on the rug, they would rub his nose in it, and then they'd get a rolled up a piece of paper, a newspaper. They'd hit the dog with the newspaper, and then there was a window over the kitchen sink. They'd throw the dog out the window into the backyard to do its business. This is a smart dog. They kept the window open most of the time. That was just their smart dog. After a couple days, the dog had learned the routine. It needed the restroom. It would go in on the rug. It would do its business on the rug and then immediately jump for the window, out the window into the backyard. The dog didn't know there was anything better. That's all it knew. Have you ever felt like that? Have you ever felt like there must be something better, but you're just not quite sure what it is? Most people, I think, who are yelled at tend to yell back. Most people who grow up in abusive or addictive homes tend to become abusive or addictive themselves. An increasing number of people don't believe in God and aren't a part of the work of the church. I think not because they've turned away from God or the church, but just because they've never known anything else. The other day I was going through my closet, I found an old watch that my grandfather gave me. I was really young when I got that watch, and it came with a story. It was made in Switzerland, which was part of the reason my grandpa wanted me to have it, because we have some Swiss background. And it was so old that you had to wind it. Do you remember a day when you had to wind your watches? In those days, Grandpa said, Switzerland had about 80% of the market share for watches. If there was a decent watch made in the world, there was an 80% chance it was made in Switzerland. Do you have a watch on with you this morning? Do you have to wind your watch? Very few of those anymore are made. And is it made in Switzerland? Probably not. There's a lot that's changed since then. Do you know about the story about what happened? There's this thing called quartz technology out there right now. Do you know who invented quartz technology? The Swiss. They had no idea that anybody would ever want a watch that you didn't have to wind. In fact, they were so sure that it would never amount to anything that they even showed it off at the World's Fair. There was a Japanese company named Seiko that said, hey, that's interesting stuff. I think that might really be something. And so they bought the technology for almost nothing. They didn't believe that there could ever be anything better. When you're satisfied with the cheap stuff, it's hard to know what you're missing. Have you ever had the feeling that there has to be something better? That there has to be a way about your living that you're just not even aware of? That there's a depth to joy or peace or hope that you have yet to experience? I think this story is meant to introduce the idea that that's what's offered to us by God in Jesus Christ. The wine, the sign. Usually when I talk about this story, I talk about it as being a miracle. But that's not the way it's referred to in the Gospel according to John. It's referred to as a sign. I think there's a difference between a miracle and a sign. I think a miracle is just a reversal in natural tendencies. But a sign is something that points its way to something else. So if this is a sign, then the question is, what does it point the way towards? What amazes me about Jesus' miracles is not that there are so many of them, but that all of them have something to teach us about the way, about the nature of God, or about who Jesus is, or about our relationship with God. In this story, for example, Jesus turns water into wine. If you remember, the wine is run out. Jesus' mother comes to him and says, you have to do something. So he says, well, there are a bunch of water jars there. Fill them with water and bring them to me. That got me to wondering, why would you have 6 20 to 30 gallon water jars laying around? I don't have water jars laying around my house like that, do you? So I looked into it a little more closely. We're told that they were for Jewish purification rites. Often they would have water at the entrance of the temple, not just so that you could clean your hands or your feet, but so you could purify yourselves. It was a way of symbolically setting your life right with God so you would be ready for worship. The Torah is even specific about how much water it takes to do that, and it says that a cup of water is all that's necessary to purify 100 men. Now there are 120 to 180 gallons of water there. Or in other words, there was enough water to purify the world. Do you see the message here? Jesus shifts the focus off of the water onto himself as if to say, if there's enough water to purify the world, and if that purification that water offers, he's now offering, then there's enough grace in him for the entire world. Jesus changes the water that had symbolized purification into his own life, saying that he has... there is enough grace in him available to purify the whole world. I know of a couple who has a daughter. Daughter's maybe 3 or 4 years old, and they just found out that they're expecting a new member of their family. And when they told their daughter that she was going to get a new brother or sister, their daughter seemed to get really worried. Instead of get excited, she got really worried. And they hoped that it would go away, but she seemed to stay worried, and so they came to the point where they decided they had to talk to her. So they talked to her a little bit, and smart kid. She said, well, if I'm going to get a new brother or sister, does that mean that you as mom and dad will love me any less? It's a good thought, isn't it? Is love like me? There's only so much of it, and once we use it up, it's gone. Well, you all know better. What they said to her is, no, our family's just going to be bigger, and so there will be more love for all of us to share. Love is not like money. It's not like something that when you use it, it's gone. It's more like something that the more you give it away, the more you receive. So what's that mean about our faith? There are those who would like to act as if there's only so much of Jesus to go around. Like if Jesus loves me, that means Jesus can't possibly love you as much. This is a sign that there's a better way. There's enough of Jesus to go around. And the more that we receive that love, the more that we share that love, the more love there is to go around. The wine, the sign, and the last. The story ends with the steward telling the bridegroom. Most people use the good wine first and then save the bad wine till the end when everybody's drunk, but you've saved the good wine until last. He saved the best for last. I think that the Gospel of John is trying to tell us that God is like that also. God saves the best for last. That Abraham, Noah, Moses are great stories. They did great things, but that in Jesus we have someone who's coming later and is even better than them. That God sent the prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel who had great things to tell us about the truth of God, but that what Jesus has to tell us about the truth of God is even more important. That John the Baptist came preaching in the wilderness, and that was a great thing. But that Jesus came as one even greater than John the Baptist. God had saved the best for last. Why is that important? Well, I'll be honest with you. Sometimes I worry that my best days are behind me. Sometimes I worry that our best days as a church are behind us. I mean, I've had some good times in the past. And so I found myself asking, do I really believe that our best days, my best days, are ahead of us? Am I really living as if I believe that the best things God has to do for us are yet to come? Why does a gymnast put their best part of their routine at the very end of their routine? Because somewhere they got to believe that the best comes last, right? Why is fireworks have the grand finale at the very end instead of maybe halfway through? Maybe to remind us that the best comes last. Why are we watching the football or the basketball game until the very last minutes, even when we know that the team that we want to win is going to lose? Because if there's going to be a Hail Mary pass at the end or a three-point half-court dunk so that the game gets won in the last 3 seconds, why? Because somewhere in that the best is going to come last, right? I've had a reminder of this week. The car that I usually drive is an 08 Honda Accord. So it's 8 years old now. My brother-in-law just got a 16 Honda Accord. Brand new. Same car, same accessories for the most part. This one's just 8 years newer. I figured it would be the same car, right? Well, he showed me a little bit about his car, and do you know, in his car, if he puts it in reverse, it's got a camera on the back of the car that shows you where you're going backwards. It's also got blinkers on the end of the mirrors so that if you're on the side of the car, you can tell which way he's signaling to turn. There is a camera on the side of the car, so if he's going to turn right, a camera comes on in his blind spot to show him what's back there. And if he happens to veer out of the lane that he's in, his seat will vibrate to warn him that there might be something wrong. It made me wonder, if I'm still alive in 50 or 100 years, what are cars going to look like then? What if it's really true that the best is yet to come? Do you believe that? Do you believe that the best is yet to come? What keeps us going when things don't work out the way that you think that they should? I think it's that belief that the best is yet to come. What can you say yourself when people are telling you that the world is falling apart around you? Maybe the best is yet to come. What can you have confidence in when you're finding it hard to find the energy to keep going ahead? Maybe that the best is yet to come. It's easier to carry the water when you know that Jesus is going to turn it into wine. The gospel was written by people who already know how the story is going to end. And so they would have known that there would come a time when Jesus would gather around a dinner table with his very best friends, when he'd take bread and then when he'd take a cup and he'd say, a cup of wine, and say, "This is my blood shed out for you. Do this in remembrance of me." They would have also known that there was a time where it didn't look like Jesus had much of a future, where he was crucified. He was tried and crucified for crimes that he didn't commit. But they also would have known what happened after that on the third day. The death is not the end, that after that he was raised, that the best is yet to come. The Gospel of John begins at a wedding, it ends at a funeral. Today we consider the miracle of Jesus turning water into wine.